Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Good afternoon, Steve Jones Show, News Radio 1070 WKOK. Look for us at stevejonesshow.com. Like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle at Steve Jones PSU. And subscribe to our podcast. Our podcast is available on both iTunes, the Apple Podcast app, and Google Play. If you do listen to us on iTunes, don't hesitate to leave us a review. And you can also zip us an email anytime. Steve Jones at WKOK.com. Sean Carey here, and Steve on his way in to the Sunbury Motors Studio. Sunbury Motors Ford Lincoln Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors Kia on the Strip, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Got a very busy show for you today. Be with you live till 5. Matt Cotrillo at the anchor desk this afternoon. He'll have our late-day news roundup, 5:06. And then tonight we'll have Phillies baseball here on WKOK. 6:35 will be on deck time. And first pitch will be 7:10 tonight, Phillies and the Mets.
How about the Arizona Diamondbacks? Have you heard that? The Arizona Diamondbacks have not only won 12 in a row. All right, listen to this. They have not been behind in a game since August 25th.
Wow.
If they go five innings tonight, I think they're playing the Dodgers. If they go five innings tonight without being behind, they'll set the major league record for most consecutive innings, either tied or in front. How about that?
Yeah, it's been pretty crazy checking the standings out. The left coast standings, especially earlier in the year. I mean, we had that three-team, jumble there. You know, three-team tight there at the top with the Dodgers, the Diamondbacks, and the Rockies. But boy, the Rockies have—they've been in free fall for the past month and a half.
They won their last two. Milwaukee lost their last two. So now the Rockies have, I think, a two and a half game lead for that last wild card spot. And despite the fact, the Dodgers are 1-9 their last 10, and Arizona's won 12 in a row. They still have an 11.5 game lead.
Wow. So two things could happen this year. The Dodgers could get 100 wins, and the Phillies, they're in danger of losing 100 games for the first time since 1961.
But the Phillies have become more fun.
Yes.
And that's the part that you have to like. The kids are now up, and the kids are pretty good.
Yeah, Pete McKinnon was saying it's nice to see a lot of the young guys in the lineup. Every little bit helps. Gives us a great little spurt of energy going down the stretch. So it's been very nice. Pete says it's been very nice to see.
Yeah, really nice. You know, everybody talks about Rhys Hoskins, but there are others. So that's been a plus. So at least there's a little bit of hope down there. A little bit. So what's your opinion on the Zeke Elliott thing?
Yeah, play a game and then you're going to start your six-game suspension? I mean, this has just been a complete mess from the jump. I mean, it's just... The NFL, they want to police everything. They want to be the judge and jury. And it's like, correct me if I'm wrong. He has not been arrested or accused of anything. Correct?
Right.
There you go.
Well, I don't know.
It just does not make any sense.
Well, I have not had enough time to really read a lot about the Elliott situation. I just haven't. I will freely admit I'm in a process right now of doing 7 games in 8 days.
A little busy.
So that does deter you a bit from sitting down and saying, let's look at the details.
If they want him to be out 6 games, I mean, you start right away. But I guess it's just been hung up in some courts here and there. But
without the tails, and I don't have a lot of them here, one thing I've maintained the entire time is because Roger Goodell personally botched the Ray Rice situation, and because the league botched the Brown situation, the Giants kicker, that there was no way on the planet that they were going to let this be anything less than 6 games. No way. Because this, to me, is more about league saving face than it is whatever the facts do or do not say. Just like in the Brady case. And I mentioned this now. It's not domestic violence, so they're on 2 different planes here. But I read the Wells report. What a waste of paper. What a waste of ink. I mean, that's the second most embarrassing report I've ever read. So, I mean, it's just... I read that and I thought, this is... So what? Well, this is a piece of junk. Well, where's your evidence? Show me some evidence here that there's an issue here. You got all these officials handling footballs during games. They don't notice there's a difference. I mean, did they really weigh them before the game? Really? They claim they did. Sure you did. Yeah. All right. And then when it comes to this, I mean, look, the league has made one mistake after another here. They're not on a roll. 4 years ago, I made the statement on this show where I thought that the National Football League, at that point, seemed bulletproof. That they were on a roll when it came to TV, the product, the ratings, the enthusiasm, fantasy leagues, things like that. They were on a roll. And since I made that statement, they have done everything they can to make one mistake after another. How they handled the Rice thing, how they handled, the Brown thing. There have been a couple of other things that they've handled along the way where he sat back and said, how they've handled the concussion issue. Not good. Not good. I mean, you think about that. All the mistakes they've made. Ratings went down 8% last year. Some say it's because of the election. Some say it's because of the national anthem protests. Some say it's a combination of the two. We're about to find out this year. Now you got the Cleveland Police Union and EMTs. They're not going to hold the flag of the Browns game. And I said, look, you want to disrespect us? We're not going to do it. And they're not going to do it. So there's so many issues where they just have not shown any leadership at all. I have no connection to the NFL. And they're not showing any leadership. So maybe they feel on this issue, hey, we're going to show them we're showing some leadership. And now you get people looking over and saying, well, okay, where's the evidence? The authorities didn't come up with any evidence. And again, I don't know enough about it. Okay? Maybe the league is absolutely right, but I knew they would never reduce it because of what the issue is. They're trying to save face here. And, of course, you know this thing will go to court. And this will play the old court volleyball thing here for a while. And, you know, that's how it's going to play out. You know, they're going to, the NFLPA is going to pick a court that's friendly to them. The legal pick of court that's friendly to them. And then they'll start doing this. Sean and I are trying to figure out if there's any court that's friendly to us. Is there one? Yeah, that's what it's coming down to. So they're going to play that game. Bill Hillgrove is going to join us on the show today. I'm really looking forward to that, getting his perspective. Not, you know, obviously on Pitt and Penn State, but you know, obviously I've got to take a little bit and ask him about the Steelers. By the way, the suit has already declared that Le'Veon Bell can go. And Dave Spadaro's on the show today. All right, let's go to Ron in Sunbury. Hey, Ron.
Hi, Steve. How are you doing?
Good, Ron. How are you?
I'm great. I have a kind of a mixed emotion about this whole not standing for the national anthem thing. For years, I've gone out to Penn State. They hosted a fantastic Veterans Day thing, in which, you know, people stand who are veterans, and everybody applauds them. Right. I don't get what the deal is with the NFL and why people just can't just stand, honor the flag, and go about their business. I mean, something that I think this country, you know, has fought for. It sickens me that these players want to use this platform to make a statement, but then they don't do anything about it after that.
Well, you know, now you and I both know that one of the issues in the, it's not an issue, one of the rights that we have in this country is the freedom of expression, which those that you just talked about, veterans, have fought for and given their blood for, that so that we continue to have that right. So this is their ability under freedom of expression to express themselves. With that said, to me, standing for the national anthem and putting one's hand over the heart respects all the blood that has been spilled, in my opinion, that's allowed us to stand there and do it. That's my freedom of expression.
But I guess my point is those who kneel, what are they doing afterward? Are they actually going out to communities and making things right? Are they helping anybody else out?
I think some are. I think some are. I believe that you'd find that actually they do in some ways. I think that there's certain things that they've reacted to that they don't have enough information on. It's interesting that some will say that they are protesting because of police action, for example,
right,
toward the community. Yet they're the first ones to, when they get on the bus from the hotel to go over, they get a police escort. Okay.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, maybe the police officers ought to look at them and say, "Good luck from the hotel. You're on your own. Fight traffic like everybody else."
One other quick question. What's your thoughts on the game this weekend?
It'd be a better game, I think, than most people think. I think one of the things that Pitt likes to do is they want to, I think, drain the clock as much as possible in this game. Penn State's offensive pace will be really important because I think they can keep Pitt off balance with their defense. And then offensively, can they get Pitt off schedule? If they get Pitt off schedule and put them into a situation where they're third down and seven, then they've got Pitt really right where they want them. Conversely, on offense, if Penn State's doing really well on first and second down, Pitt will not be able to keep up with them.
Awesome. awesome. Thank you, Steve. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Appreciate it, Ron. Great comments. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Penn State football is on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
The Penn State Nittany Lions are Big Ten champions.
Penn State football is sponsored by First National Insurance, Sealers Grove Ford, Click Associates, Murray Motor Chevrolet, Mifflinburg Auto Sales, Purdy Insurance Agency, Sunbury Motor Company, and W&L Subaru. The Nittany Lions are back in Beaver Stadium to take on Pitt Saturday. Kickoff is set for 3:30. We're on beginning at 2 o'clock on News Radio 1070 WKOK. All right, great to have you with us on the show today. Ron made some really good points. It's a very passionate issue. You're trying to balance the freedom of expression with respect. I want to kneel. I want to stand. First thing, I've done games where people have knelt down or whatever. The Penn State Michigan game last year, several Michigan players did it, and it's on the near sideline with everybody else standing. I never saw them. I have my standard. I stand up. I put my hand over my heart. I don't sing the national anthem because I think you should be kind to people around you. It's not my strong suit.
Neither mine either. It's why I've been playing the songs on the radio for the living for over 30 years.
Right. And but that's what I do. And I don't really impose my standard on anybody else. I don't care if they want to stand, sit, kneel, stand their head, whatever. Now, it's interesting. It's not a situation that ever comes up here at Penn State when it comes to football. The reason why is that neither team is on the field when they play the national anthem. The band's out there. They play the national anthem. The teams aren't out of the locker room yet. The team doesn't come out of the locker room until after they're done with the pregame routine. It's been this like that for years, so it's never been an issue here of anybody doing anything on either team. So when Michigan, for example, comes in here, if there are players that want to kneel for the national anthem, they're going to be doing it in the locker room. They're not going to be doing it out in the field. Bill Hillgrove, next half hour, we'll talk with the legendary play-by-play voice of the Steelers and the legendary play-by-play voice of Pitt football and basketball. He joins us next. Then later in the show today, we'll have with us Dave Spadaro, Eagles insider. We'll talk with him, and Andrew Brandt of Sports Illustrated will join us today. Tomorrow on the show, we're going to have Joe Susan at 3:35, High School Football Roundtable, and Jerry DiPolo from the Pittsburgh Tribune. So we're busy the next couple of days. It's great to have you on board with us.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And no matter what business you're in, there are certain individuals in a business or a profession that you just respect more than others just because of the quality and the longevity of the body of their work. One of them, without question, in my particular business happens to be the outstanding Bill Hillgrove, the legendary voice of the Pitt Panthers in football and basketball and the Pittsburgh Steelers. Bill, welcome. It's great to have you back on the show.
Steve, always great to be with you. And, I think it's a matter of luck to be able to stick around this long. The more I think about it, the more I'm convinced.
Well, you know what? Let's talk about luck, the fact that we've been able to listen to you for so many years. Now, that's luck on our part. We appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you.
I want to get into Pitt here right away with them. It's an opening game, so everything's done, as you and I both know, in the context of an opening game. What did you see pro and con in Pitt for an opener?
Well, they dominated the first half, and all of a sudden it looked like they had changed jerseys because Youngstown kind of took the play to them in the second half. and blocked better and tackled better. And as a result, the whole thing shifted and got way too scary. Anytime you go into overtime, I don't care who the opponent, you could lose very easily. Fortunately, in the overtime, they made the two big plays, and that's what Narduzzi's going to hang his hat on, saying, hey, okay, it wasn't the Mona Lisa, but it was a W, and we beat a good football team, so let's move on.
Yep, exactly right. You just, and people forget, Youngstown State, to its credit, was in the FCS championship game a year ago, so it's not exactly the Little Sisters of the Poor that were on the other side on Saturday.
Yeah, Stephen, they have a... Steve, they have a bunch of transfers who are eligible, like, right away. I think maybe seven or eight from Power 5 conferences and three or four from the Big Ten itself. So, you know, they've got people who can play, and, you know, they're probably under Bo Pelini going to take another shot at that big one again.
Yeah, no question. One of the transfers that Pitt has is Max Brown. And Bill, I got a little bit of a look at him on tape last year because I was getting ready for the Rose Bowl, so I wanted to just see, compare, contrast him and Darnold as to why USC took off. What do you think of him just in the limited time you've seen him?
He makes good decisions, and I think that's what I saw in training camp, and certainly that's what I saw in the Youngstown game. Maybe one exception, he had a little rollout, and instead of trying to get the first down himself, he decided to dump it at his running back, and I think that was a mistake. But you know what? He first game in over a year, calendar year. I think he did. He acquitted himself very nicely.
I want to ask you about Allison, the tailback, because when James Conner was out a couple of years ago, Allison stepped in, gained 1,100 yards, and was the ACC Rookie of the Year. What makes him a really good back, in your opinion, Bill?
He has a good sense of where the crack is. He also is a big, strong kid, and he's got quick feet. So I think, you know, all those elements lead to a pretty good running back. And he, you know, tweaked, I think, a hamstring. I don't know. I mean, he went out for a little bit, then came back and played the rest of the game. So it's, you know, nothing to really worry about. But I was impressed with A.J. Davis, and they went to him at the goal line when Olsen was out getting his, you know, hamstring rubbed or whatever they were doing. And I was impressed with this kid. He's kind of jumped ahead of a kid named Moss and another kid named Wood on a depth chart, and there he was, you know, in a meaningful situation. So I think they're pretty well stocked at running back. The tight end situation, thanks to that graduate transfer from Rutgers, Flanagan, you know, and they've got a transfer from UCLA and Clark, so I think that position is pretty good. And now that they get Bookser back this week, the O-line will be a little bit better. Wide receivers, well, Henderson, he didn't figure much in the passing game, but boy, he figures in the running game and the return game, and he is quite the electric player.
I thought in last year's game, if I had to pick out a play, that was, to me, the pivotal play. It was when Henderson, he didn't score on it, but it was the kickoff return. In that jet sweep action and then the return action, he is just one of those guys that if you're coaching against him, he's one of your game destroyers.
Yeah, a great change of direction. And he put a couple of shake-and-bake moves on guys on Saturday that I thought he's even better at that than he was. And he admitted on the post-game show that he'd worked on it in the off-season, that his coach gave him some special drills to work at change of direction. And, boy, he's good at, you know, looking and seeing where they ain't, and he's really good at running where they ain't.
Bill, obviously I saw what Pat Narduzzi did at Michigan State, and he did some great work at Michigan State. He ended up with some really, really good corners that could cover one-on-one, which allowed him to turn the other nine guys loose. At Pitt, it's only the third year, so it's a work in progress. But how do you think he's disappointed that it hasn't come together as quickly on defense as a guy like him who coaches that part so well? Has he been disappointed with that part?
Well, I saw it against Syracuse last year when the two football teams scored more total points than the two basketball teams. And he could, you know, he just shook his head and said, we can't stop anybody. And I think he's fixing that. And I think, I know it's a while to develop, but I think this back end of this defense has a pretty good chance to be a strength rather than a liability. So let's see how it plays out. I'll feel better when Jordan Whitehead is in there.
Right.
And I'll feel better if DeMar Hamlin can find a way to get healthy. But in the meantime, their corners are good. Dane Jackson did a good job. Maddox is a proven corner. I think at safety we saw some good play inside. But, you know, when Whitehead gets in there, you can get dramatic plays inside, and I think that's going to be one of the keys.
Yeah, he's one of the explosive players when he's finally out there. It's going to feel like for you to go back into Beaver Stadium for the first time since 99.
Oh, man, it'll be, I think, a great experience. I have some fond memories of playing up there, and I have some disappointing memories of playing up there. But, yeah, it's going to be great. And, you know, with that big crowd and hooting and hollering and doing, what do they call that, when they, right before they say, "We are Penn State," what do they call that thing?
Oh, the cowbell. They do the cowbell thing. They also
But there's another name for it. Anyhow, I'm kind of looking forward to the whole experience. We'll drive up Friday evening, and then naturally after the game, I got to get to Cleveland for 1 o'clock. So my place at Conneaut Lake kind of lies in between, so we'll spend at least overnight in Conneaut.
Yeah, very nice. I want to ask you about the Steelers because you're getting ready for that one as well in the opener with Cleveland. What does it say about the Steelers management-wise that they go through the preseason and they say, you know what, we're going to sign Hayden, we're going to trade for Wilcox? I mean, to me, that I respected what they did saying so much because it just told me right away, I don't like what I'm seeing. I'm going to correct it now. Do you feel the same way?
I do. I felt good about the reach for Hayden. I know the guy has had surgeries on his groins, both groins, but you know, he probably doesn't have the blazing speed that he possessed as a young player coming out of Florida, but he plays it well above the neck, and I think they need that steady play back there to kind of, you know, allow Artie Burns to develop, and I think he's going to be an all-pro corner. So yeah. I think it was a great move. I think Wilcox, because we haven't seen Mike Mitchell yet. We haven't seen him on the field anywhere. And so they got to have a safety ready to go. And I thought it was interesting. I checked today, and neither Hayden nor Wilcox has a number yet. Now, I don't know if the Steelers are playing games, but I do know this, Steve. I think because of all of the cuts happening at once in the NFL for the first time ever, I think these possibilities lent themselves to reality, you know, that trade for Joe Hayden. And so because they had to make all those decisions in 1 week, and I think because of contracts, certain players were available that otherwise wouldn't. And, you know, the Steelers, I think, have that now mentality because, you know, Ben's not getting any younger, and he's made noise about retiring, so they figure, well, the window's still open, let's climb through it.
That's a really good point. Le'Veon Bell, I've noticed it just in doing some research that when he has come back from, quote, various situations that have kept him from starting a season on time, that they haven't really been that shy about easing in his workload. You know, he'll get 18, 20 touches in these particular games. Is that what you're expecting, or are you expecting them to ease him in a little bit?
I think so. Mike Tomlin at his news conference Tuesday pretty much said, I wish this were Friday and we knew more. He knew that Le'Veon was in great physical condition, but football conditioning, that's still a question mark. That's answered yesterday, today, tomorrow, and then we'll see on Sunday if he's ready to take that many touches. If I would guess at it, 15 or 16, because you have a kid in James Conner who doesn't really give you a whole lot of drop-off at that position. James doesn't have that jump cut that Le'Veon has, but James has the same type of vision, and Lord knows he's strong enough to take on defenders. So, you know, I think they're comfortable with that situation.
What's it like for you to see James Conner, that you did all of his college games, now you get to see him as a Steeler? Is there a little special place for you because, you know, he's gone through a lot, but the fact that it's going from Pitt to being with the Steelers and you're doing both?
Yep, it's pretty special, and I know his family very well. His stepfather, who has raised him since he was 11, is a sports anchor up in Erie. You know Mike Gallagher.
And, yeah, of course.
We've known that family for a long time, and, you know, it's just a great story. At every possible level, and isn't it interesting that James now has the number one selling jersey in the NFL, even more than Tom Brady? But you know what that is? That's the human story. It transcends football and sports.
It certainly does, and I know that a couple of years ago, Jack Ham played in a charity golf tournament, and James was there. And when he came back from that, and this is before we really knew everything that was going on with him, he kept telling me over and over again, he said, Steve, that's one of the nicest guys I've ever met. He was so impressed with him as a person and as a man, and obviously you've had a lot more contact with him than either one of us have had.
Everything is yes, sir, no, sir, thank you, please. He's quiet, unassuming, until they snap the ball. And what I like about him, and we've seen his character in his battle against the disease, but for instance, in the Clemson game, they had a player that forced him out of bounds, I'd say early fourth quarter, and really got up in his face and talked a lot of trash. James ignored him, handed the ball to the official. Maybe two, maybe three plays later, they called a power left, and it was blocked. I mean, it was sealed off. So he just changed direction, looked out to his right, and guess who's sitting out there? His trash-talking friend. And you see the touchdown run. It's the best stiff arm face plant I've seen probably in 20 years of watching football.
Wow.
Bill, and that, I'm really, you know, looking that's forward the way he plays the game. He point to the scoreboard. Yeah. Don't talk trash. Don't talk the game. Play the game.
That's the kind of guy that you and I like to watch. I mean,
absolutely.
Those are the people I like to watch. I mean, you and I, who have done this a while, like to watch guys like that. Bill, an absolute pleasure. Thanks so much. I'm really looking forward to seeing you on Saturday. And be safe on the trip in.
And likewise. I think this will be a lot of fun.
Looking forward to it. Bill Hillgrove, the legendary voice of Pitt football, basketball, and also of the Pittsburgh Steelers. Our pleasure to have him on the show today. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Subaru Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Well, Doug Birdsong does a great job, doesn't he? He and Kevin have the game on Saturday. That's a noon start with the Crusaders of Holy Cross over Christie. And they'll be on the air at 11:30 with the pregame show. Now, last week they did, a one-hour pregame show, didn't they?
They did.
And this time they're back to a half hour. Because everybody found out right away an hour is too long or what?
They expanded it last week just with all the big activities going on with the season opener and the huge tailgate party and the fireworks. And glad they were able to get all that off without a hitch last week and didn't let the weather dampen things. But weather we won't have to worry about around here this weekend. So looking at this point,
yeah,
terrific.
But you know what?
We're here.
I'm glad that we have good weather this weekend. That's great, but Irma is a monster. 185 miles an hour, Category 5. I mean, when you're talking about 185, that's not gusting to 185. That's sustained winds of 185.
Some are even thinking, boy, 185, that should be even a that should even be higher than a Category 5. That's all the higher it goes when they
right.
rank those.
It's as high as it goes. I mean, I remember Camille being like 190 miles an hour back in 1969, but... And I remember that, too, in the destruction of Louisiana, Mississippi, and so forth. But this storm is unbelievable. So they've already taken Miami Hurricane Arkansas State game. That's canceled. They're not going to, so Miami's is going to play 11 games this year, not 12. Same with Arkansas State. The Bucks and the Dolphins have been moved to November. So they're going to play that game in November. So that's off the schedule this weekend as well. So sports-wise, that's how they're handling it. For the people down there, I mean, water, gasoline, trying to, board up, figure out what to do. We just saw the tremendous destruction and the help that they need now on the Gulf Coast from Corpus Christi to Galveston, Houston in between, and Beaumont and places like that. And I know all of us have made some sort of donation to various charities to help out because, I mean, those are our people down there. And now Florida, maybe Florida gets hit, or maybe it turns and Georgia and South Carolina get hit, something. But unbelievable destruction. We're talking about 185 mile an hour. Have you ever been in a hurricane, Sean?
I was six when Agnes went through Pennsylvania, so I was still kind of a little too young to deal with that. But we had a well. I actually had a well in our backyard, and we had neighbors up and down the street coming to our place to get water. That I do remember. Yeah.
Well, remember, Agnes did what Harvey did. It wouldn't move. And I started going to school at the Wilkes-Barre campus in 1976, which is out in Lehman. It's in the back mountain, so it's about 15 miles from Wilkes-Barre. And this is 4 years after Agnes. Agnes happened in 72. And for the 2 years I was there, I heard one constant story about Agnes after another. So when you hear stories about people suffering from PTSD when they're hit by a natural disaster, I thought about that when I read that story. I thought, really? And then I started thinking, wait a minute. You know, when I was at Wilkes-Barre, I was told over and over again about the flooding in Wilkes-Barre and Kingston and Plymouth and all those that great area up and down the Susquehanna River. Those people were dramatically affected for a long time because they kept telling stories about it, and they weren't funny stories. They were dramatic stories about what happened and everything they had to do to get through it. Well, now you put it on the scale of what Harvey's done down there. You put it on the scale of what Irma might do, and nobody knows where this thing's going. Nobody knows where it's going, what it's going to affect next. So while we have the fun area, which is sports, a storm like this, which, like Harvey, with death, destruction, damage, long-lasting effect. Wow. It's amazing. The Caribbean islands have been hit hard. Now, what it does after this, nobody knows. And now, does it eventually get up here as a gigantic rainstorm? Could. But, they're claiming now it's going to turn a little bit more east, like north and then a little bit east. And that maybe it's to Georgia, South Carolina by Monday afternoon. Unbelievable.
Yeah, we'll have to see. Yeah, you're right. With you see those radar photos, it's just the distinct look of that storm. It just blows your mind as to how much power it has. And yeah, the trajectory is going to be interesting and see if we get any of the remnants of it early next week, depending, being Monday or Tuesday.
Unbelievable. Well, us would probably be Tuesday, maybe somewhere around there. Once they hit land, they move. Now, people in Texas won't tell you that, or Louisiana, because Harvey stuck around for a while, but most hurricanes, once they hit land, move. But 185 mile an hour, and I saw the overhead view of it, the satellite view of it, unbelievable. And not only that, it's been a Category 5 for days. I mean, days. Oh, boy. Dave Spadaro coming up next half hour. We're going to talk about the Eagles. Andrew Brandt will join us from Sports Illustrated. We'll talk a little business and about Zeke Elliott and about the new Matthew Stafford contract.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. You can hear us anywhere in the world with the Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation app.